or music eventually. She studies him. I will be your kept woman. Her voice is low. This is what she wanted to avoid. His answering smile is rueful. Only until it's legal for you to work here. Think of this as a redistribution of wealth. How socialist you are, Lord Trevethick, she teases. Who knew? He raises his glass to her. She reciprocates, and as she takes a sip of wine, an idea forms in her head. But will he agree? What is it? He asks. Alessia draws a deep breath. I will clean for you, and you will pay me. Maxim frowns, taken aback. Alessia, you don't need... Please, I want this. She stares at him, silently begging for him to agree. Aless, please. He rolls his eyes in exasperation. Okay, if that's what you want. But on one condition. What? Can I veto the housecoat and scarf? I will think about it, she smirks, feeling more lighthearted. He laughs, and she breathes a sigh of relief. She will have something to do while his people resolve her immigration status. A warmth spreads through her body. This is not where she thought her life might lead, here in this old grand house with this handsome, gentle, kind man. Of course she had fantasized about it, in a vague way, but she thought it was impossible. She had challenged her destiny and taken a huge risk when she left Albania, and fate had not let go without a fight. Yet her mister had intervened, and now she's here with him. Safe. He loves her, and she loves him, and the future stretches before her full of possibility. Perhaps, after all this time, fortune has turned its benign smile on her.
Chapter 25. A primal wail disturbs my dream, waking me in an instant. Alessia. In the soft light from the little dragon, I see that she's asleep beside me, but utterly still, her hands clenched into fists beneath her chin. She's like a statue petrified by some natural disaster. She parts her lips and cries out again, the most eerie and unearthly of sounds. I prop myself up on my elbow and gently shake her awake. Alessia, sweetheart, wake up. Her eyelids fly open. She looks around wildly and immediately starts fighting me off. Alessia, it's me, Maxim. I grab her hands before she does either of us any harm.
Maxim,
she whispers and stops struggling. You're having a bad dream. I'm here. I've got you. I gather her in my arms and pull her on top of me, kissing the crown of her head. She's trembling.
I thought,
she stutters. It's okay. It's just a bad dream. You're safe. I hold her and tenderly stroke her back, wishing I could take all her fear and pain away. She shivers but seems to settle, and before long she's asleep again. I close my eyes, one hand in her hair and the other on her back, enjoying her weight and her skin against mine. I could get used to this.
Alessia wakes in the gray light of early morning. She's nestled under Maxim's arm, her hand splayed on his belly. He's fast asleep, with his face turned toward her. His hair is tousled, his lips slightly parted, and his cheeks and jawline shaded with stubble. He looks relaxed and quite irresistible. She stretches out beside him, enjoying the pull of her muscles. Her side is a little sore, and her bruise is still tender, but she feels good. No more than good. Hopeful, calm. Powerful, safe, because of this wonderful man asleep beside her. She loves him with all her heart, and what's more remarkable, he loves her too. She can scarcely believe it. He's given her hope. Maxim stirs and his eyelids blink open. Good morning, she whispers. It is now, he answers with a mischievous gleam in his eye. You look lovely. Sleep well? Yes. You had a nightmare.
Me? Last night?
You don't remember? Alessia shakes her head. He skims her cheek with the backs of his fingers. I'm glad you don't. How are you feeling?
Good.
Good or good? His tone is sultry.
Very good, she grins.
Maxim rolls over, pinning her to the mattress, and stares down at her, his green eyes glowing. God, I love waking up next to you, he whispers and kisses her throat. She throws her arms around his neck and surrenders gladly to his skilled mouth. I suppose we should get up and go back to London, Maxim murmurs against her belly. Alessia's fingers play with his hair, but she's too relaxed to move. She's relishing the few moments of quiet after their passionate storm. Finally, he interrupts her reverie. Shower with me. He turns his head to look up at her with the broadest of smiles. How can she resist?
Alessia towel dries her hair while I shave. The bruise on her side looks smaller, but it's still a livid purple. A wave of guilt washes through me. She certainly gave me no indication last night or this morning that she was in any pain. She gives me a dazzling smile over her shoulder, and like a sea mist in the breeze, my guilt fades into the ether. Part of me wants to stay here with her forever. But I'm also anxious to leave. I don't want Sergeant Nancarrow or his colleague coming to the hall to interview Alessia. I need to keep her away from the police. If necessary, I'll inform him that business has taken me back to London. It will be a shame to go. I'm enjoying our comfortable familiarity, and I marvel at the change in her. She seems far more confident, and it's been only a few days. Tossing her hair to the side, with a glance at me, she strolls out of the bathroom, naked as the day she was born. I peek around the doorframe. The view is too tantalizing not to enjoy. Her hair swinging almost to her waist in a gentle counterpoint to her walk. She stops at the bed and rummages through the wicker basket on the ottoman, looking for some clothes. When she glances up and catches me gawking, she smirks, and I move back to stare at my reflection in the mirror with a smug grin. Her newfound confidence is sexy as hell. A few moments later, she appears in the doorway and leans on the frame. She's wearing the clothes I bought her, and I know it's going to be a good day. In the bottom of the armoire, there should be a bag you can use for your clothes, or I can ask Danny to pack them for you.
I can do it, she folds her arms, studying me. I like to watch you shave.
I like you watching me. I murmur as I finish up. Turning, I brush her lips with a kiss, then wipe my face with the remaining foam. Let's have some breakfast and get on the road. Alessia is animated on our drive back to London. We talk and laugh and talk some more. She has the most infectious giggle. When we hit the M4, she takes command of the music and we listen to the Rachmaninoff. As the first bars of the piano concerto begin to play, I'm reminded of when she played this piece at the hideout. The memory is stirring. I watched her lose herself in the music, and she took me with her. From the corner of my eye, I notice Alessia's fingers pressing imaginary keys through the cadenza. I'd love to see her play this again, but this time as a performance with a full orchestra. Have you seen Brief Encounter?
No.
It's a classic British film. The director uses this piece throughout the movie. It's cool. It's one of my mother's favorite films.
I'd like to see it. I love this music.
And you play it so well.
Thank you.
She gives me a shy smile.
What is she like?
My mother. She's ambitious, clever, funny, not very maternal.
As I say it, I feel a stab of disloyalty. But the truth is, Rowena always seemed bored or inconvenienced by her young children. She happily handed us over to our various nannies and sent us off to boarding school. It was only after our father died that we became more interesting to her. Though she was always interested in Kid.
Oh,
says Alessia. My relationship with my mother is a little strained. I suppose I never forgave her for leaving my father.
She left him?
She sounds shocked. She left all of us. I was 12.
I'm sorry.
She met someone younger and broke my father's heart.
Oh.
It's okay. It was a long time ago. We have an uneasy truce now. Well, ever since Kit died. Talking about this is grim. Choose another song. I prompt when the Rachmaninoff finishes. Something cheerful. She smiles and scrolls through the list.
Melody?
I laugh.
Rolling Stones?
Yes, play that. She taps the screen and the countdown begins. 2, 1, 2, 3, followed by the blues piano. Alessia grins. She likes it. Lord, I have so much music I'd like to share with her. The roads are quiet and we make good time. We fly past the junction for Swindon, with a further 80 miles to go until we reach Chelsea. But I have to stop for petrol, so I take the slip road for Membury Services. Alessia's demeanour suddenly changes. Her hand grips the door handle and she casts large, apprehensive eyes at me. I know that service stations make you anxious. We'll just get petrol, okay? Reaching over, I give her knee a reassuring squeeze. She nods, but looks unconvinced. I pull up by a petrol pump, and she hops out to stand beside me while I fill up.
You going to keep me company?
She nods and dances from foot to foot to stay warm, her breath a gauzy cloud around her. Her eyes survey the locale and fix on the parked trucks. She's watchful, wary. It's painful to see her this way, especially when she'd been so relaxed this morning. You know you're safe now. The police have them, I say to reassure her. But then the pump stops with a loud metallic clunk, startling us both. The tank is full. Let's pay. Hooking the nozzle back in its holder, I slip my arm around her shoulders, and we head into the shop. She walks beside me, subdued. You okay? We're in the queue and she's radiating anxiety, taking furtive glances at everyone in the shop.
It was my mother's idea,
she blurts, quickly, quietly.
She thought she was helping me.
It takes me a couple of seconds to realize what she's referring to. Bloody hell. She's telling me this story now? A frisson runs up my spine. Why now? I have to pay for my petrol. Hold that thought. I raise my index finger and hand the shop assistant my credit card. His eyes shift to Alessia several times. Man, she is so out of your league. Please enter your PIN, he says, smiling at Alessia, who barely gives him a glance. She's watching the petrol pumps, checking who's out there. When I'm done, I take her hand. Shall we continue talking in the car? She nods. As we climb back into the Jag, I wonder why she picks service stations and car parks for her revelations. I drive away from the pumps, park the car facing Woodland, and the engine idles off. Okay. Do you still want to talk? Alessia stares out at the leafless trees in front of us and nods.
My betrothed, he is a violent man. One day,
her voice falters. My heart sinks. It is as I feared. What the fuck did he do to her?
He does not like me playing the piano. He does not like the, attention that I get.
I despise him even more.
He is angry. He wants me to stop.
My hands tighten on the steering wheel. Alessia's voice is practically inaudible.
He hits me, and he wants to break my fingers.
What? She looks down at her hands, her precious hands. She cups one with the other, holding it tenderly. The fucking piece of shit hurt her.
I had to get away.
Of course you did. And I have to touch her, so that she knows I'm on her side. Folding both her hands in one of mine, I squeeze gently. The temptation to haul her into my lap and just hold her is overwhelming, but I resist. She needs to talk. She gives me a hesitant look and I let go.
I went in a small bus to Shkoder, and there we move into the big truck. Dante and Yili are there with 5 other girls. One of them is only 17 years.
I gasp, shocked. So young.
Her name is Bliriana. On the truck, we talked, a lot. She lives in the north of Albania too, in Firza. We became friends. We made plans to find work together.
She stops, lost in the horror of her story. Or maybe she's wondering what became of her friend.
And they take everything from us, except the clothes we are wearing and our shoes. There is only one bucket in the back. You know.
Her voice fades. That's awful.
Yes. The smell.
She shudders.
And all we have is a bottle of water. One bottle for each of us.
Her leg starts jiggling, and her face pales. I'm reminded of how she looked when I first met her. It's okay. I'm here. I've got you. I want to know. She turns dark, devastated eyes to me.
Do you?
Yes, but only if you want to tell me. Her eyes move over my face, scrutinizing me, exposing me, like that first time in my hallway. Why do I want to know? Because I love her. Because she's the sum of all her experiences, and this, sadly, is one of them. She takes a deep breath and continues.
We were in the truck for 3-4 days, maybe. I don't know how long. We stopped before the truck went on a ferry, for carrying cars and trucks. We were given bread and black plastic bags. We had to put them over our heads.
What?
It is to do with the immigration. They measure the, dioxidini carbonate.
She flounders for the words. Carbon dioxide?
Yes, that is it.
In the cab? She shrugs.
I don't know, but if there is too much, the authorities know there are people in the truck. They measure it somehow. We drove onto the ferry. The noise was loud, too loud. The engines, the other trucks, and we were in the dark. My head in a plastic bag. And then the truck stopped. The engine was off, and all we could hear was the creaking and groaning of the metal and the tires. The sea was rough. So rough. We were all lying down.
Her fingers move to the little cross at her neck, and she starts to fiddle with it.
It was hard to breathe. I thought I was going to die.
A lump forms in my throat. My voice is hoarse. No wonder you don't like the dark. That must have been terrifying.
One of the girls was sick. The smell.
She stops and gags. Alessia. But she continues. She seems compelled.
Before we went on the ferry, when we are eating the bread, I heard Dante say in English. He did not know that I understood the language. He said that we would be earning our money on our backs, and I knew our fate.
My fury is swift, burning through my blood. I wish I'd killed the fucker when I had the chance and dumped his body the way Jenkins suggested. I have never felt as inadequate as I do in this moment. Alessia drops her head, and I lift her chin gently with my fingers. I'm so sorry. She turns to face me, and there's a fire in her eyes. It's not sorrow reflected back at me, or self-pity. She's angry, really angry.
I heard rumors before. Girls missing from our town and from neighboring villages, and from Kosovo. It was in the back of my mind when I boarded the bus, but you always hope.
She swallows, and beneath her anger I see the anguish in her eyes. She feels like a fool. Alessia, you are not to blame.
and neither is your mother. She acted in good faith.
She did. And I had to get away.
I understand.
I told the girls what Dante said, and three of them believed me. Valeriana, she believed me. And when we had the chance to escape, we did. We ran. I don't know if the others succeeded. I don't know if Valeriana got away.
There's a trace of guilt in her voice.
I had Magda's address on a piece of paper. People here were celebrating Christmas. I walked for days. I think it was 6 or 7 days. I don't know. Until I reached her house, and she looked after me.
Thank God for Magda.
Yes.
Where did you sleep while you were walking?
I didn't sleep. Not really. It was too cold. I found a shop, and I stole a map.
She lowers her gaze. I can't begin to imagine this horror that you've been through. And I'm sorry.
You do not have to be sorry.
She gives me a slight smile.
This was before I met you. Now you know. Everything.
Thank you for telling me. I lean over and kiss her forehead. You brave, brave woman.
Thank you for listening.
I'll always listen, Alessia. Always. Shall we go home now? Seemingly relieved, she gives me a nod, and I restart the engine and reverse out of the space. I head for the slip road back to the motorway. There's one thing I want to know, I add, reflecting on the horrid tale she's just shared.
What?
Does he have a name?
Who?
Your betrothed. I spit the word out. I loathe him. She shakes her head.
I never say his name.
Like Voldemort, I mutter under my breath.
Harry Potter?
You know Harry Potter?
Oh, yes, my grandmother.
Don't tell me. She smuggled the books into Albania. Alessia laughs.
No, she had them sent to her, by Magda. My mother read them to me as a child, in English.
Ah, another reason you speak such good English. Is she fluent as well?
Mama. Yes. My father, he does not like it when we speak to each other in English.
I bet. The more I hear about her father, the more I dislike him, too. But I keep that to myself. Why don't you find another song? She scrolls through the screen, and her eyes light up when she finds Rye X.
We dance to this song.
Our first dance. I smile at the memory. It seems like a lifetime ago. We settle into a comfortable silence, both of us listening to the music. She seems preoccupied by the rhythm, swaying gently to and fro, and I'm happy to see that she's recovered her equilibrium after telling her harrowing story. While she chooses another song, I brood. This man, this fucker who harmed her, her betrothed, I want to know everything about him if I am to protect her from him. I need to sort out Alessia's legal status urgently, but I have no idea how. Marrying her would help, but I think she needs to be here legally for me to do that. I resolve to call Raja as soon as possible. I smirk as we pass the junction for Maidenhead and shake my head, amused by my own idiocy. I'm embracing my inner 12-year-old boy. I glance at Alessia, but she hasn't noticed. She's deep in thought, tapping her finger against her lips.
His name is Anatoly. Anatoly Facci, she says.
What? He who must not be named?
Yes.
Mentally, I file the asshole's name away. You decided to tell me?
Yes.
Why?
Because he has more power without a name.
Like Voldemort? She nods. What does he do?
I am not sure. My father owes him a big debt. Something to do with his business, I think. But I don't know what. Anatoly is a powerful man. Rich.
Really? My voice is dry. I hope to God that my bank balance is bigger than his.
I don't think his business is, illegal, yes?
Yep, that's how we'd say it. He's a crook.
A gangster.
What is it with you and gangsters? I scowl. She chuckles, and it's the most disarming and unexpected sound. What's so funny?
You got a face?
Ah, I grin. That's reason enough.
I love your face.
I'm rather attached to it as well. She laughs once more and then sobers.
You are right. He is not funny.
He's not, but he's far away. He can't hurt you here. We'll be home soon. Can we listen to the Rachmaninoff again?
Sure,
she says, scrolling through the screen once more. I pull the F-type up outside the office, and Oliver comes out to greet me and hand over new keys for my flat. This is my girlfriend, Alessia DiMarchi. I lean back and Oliver reaches through the car window to shake Alessia's hand.
How do you do? He says. I'm sorry we're not meeting under better circumstances.
He gives her a warm smile. Her answering smile is dazzling.
I hope you've recovered from your ordeal.
Alessia nods.
Thanks for sorting all this out, I say. I'll see you in the office tomorrow.
He gives me a wave, and I ease the Jag into the traffic.
Maxim carries the bags from the car to the elevator. It's odd to be back here, knowing that she'll now be staying. The doors open, and they step in, and Maxim drops her bag and pulls her into his arms. Welcome home, he whispers. And her heart skips a beat. She strains upward to kiss him, and his lips find hers, kissing her hard and long until she forgets her name. When the doors open, they are both breathless. An old lady is standing at the entrance to the elevator. She's wearing large dark sunglasses, a garish red hat with earrings and coat to match, and she's clutching a diminutive hairball of a dog. Maxim releases Alessia.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Beckstrom.
Oh, Maxim, how lovely to see you, she replies in a high-pitched voice. Or should I address you by your title now?
Maxim is fine, Mrs. B. He maneuvers Alessia out of the elevator and holds the door back for the old lady. This is my girlfriend, Alessia DiMarchi.
How do you do?
Mrs. Beckstrom beams at Alessia, but continues talking before Alessia can reply.
I see you've had the front door repaired. I hope you didn't lose much during the burglary.
Nothing that can't be replaced.
I hope they don't come back.
I think the police have them already.
Good. I hope they hang them.
Hang? They hang people here?
I'm off to walk Heracles now it's finally stopped raining.
Enjoy your walk.
I'll do just that. You too.
And she looks sideways at Alessia, who cannot help but blush. The doors close, and Mrs. Beckstrom disappears.
She's been my neighbor forever. She's about 1,000 years old, and she's batty.
Batty?
Crazy, he explains. And don't be fooled by that dog. He's a vicious little bastard.
Alessia smiles.
How long have you lived here? Since I was 19.
I don't know how old you are.
He laughs. Old enough to know better.
She frowns while Maxim unlocks the front door.
I'm 28.
Alessia grins.
You are an old man.
Old? I'll give you old.
He bends suddenly, surprising her, and scoops her up over his shoulder, avoiding her bruised side. She squeals and laughs as he waltzes into the apartment. The alarm bleeps, and Maxim turns around until Alessia is facing the alarm panel. Breathless, she enters the new code that he gives her, and when the beeping stops, Maxim slides her down his front so that she's once more in his arms.
I'm glad you're here with me, he says. I am glad too.
From his pocket, he draws the keys that Oliver gave him earlier.
For you.
Alessia takes them.
They're on a keychain with a blue leather fob that reads Engwin House. The keys to the kingdom, she says. Maxim grins. Welcome home. He bends to kiss her, his lips coaxing hers. She groans as she responds, and they lose themselves in each other.
Alessia screams as she climaxes. It's a cock-hardening sound. Her fingers are clenched around the sheets, her head tossed back, her mouth open. I kiss her clitoris as she writhes beneath me, then her belly, her navel, her stomach, and her sternum as she mules, and taking her cries into my mouth, I ease into her. My phone buzzes, and without looking at the caller ID, I know it's Caroline. I'd promised to see her. Ignoring the phone, I gaze down at Alessia, who is dozing beside me. She's becoming quite demanding in bed, and I like it. Leaning down, I kiss her shoulder and she stirs. I have to go out, I murmur. Where are you going? I have to see my sister-in-law. Oh. I haven't seen her for days, and I need to talk some things through with her. I won't be long. Alessia sits up. Okay. She glances out the window. It's dark. It's 6 p.m., I tell her. Shall I make something for us to eat? If you can find something, please. She smiles. I'll do that. If you can't find anything, we'll go out. I'll be about an hour. Reluctantly, I throw the quilt aside, get out of bed, and start to dress under Alessia's appreciative gaze. I don't tell her that I'm dreading this meeting. Chapter 26. Good evening, my lord, Blake says as he opens the front door to Trevelyan House. Hello, Blake. I don't correct him. After all, as much as it pains me, I am the Earl. Is Lady Trevethick at home? I believe she's in the morning room. Great. I'll see myself up. Oh, and thank Mrs. Blake for clearing up after the burglary. She's done a great job. Will do, my lord. Very unfortunate business. May I take your overcoat? Thanks. I slip out of my coat and he folds it over his arm. Something to drink? No, I'm good. Thanks, Blake. I vault up the stairs, turn left, take a deep, steadying breath, and open the morning room door.
Alessia examines the chaos that is the walk-in closet off Maxim's bedroom. The drawers, the racks, they are all bursting with his clothes, leaving no room to store hers. She takes her duffel bag through to the spare room and proceeds to unpack, hanging her new clothes in the small armoire. Placing her bag of toiletries on the bed, she wanders through the apartment. Everything is achingly familiar, but now she's viewing the place from a new perspective. She'd always thought of Maxim's home as a place of work. She had never dared to imagine that one day she might be living here, with him. She'd never aspired to live in a place as grand as this. She does a twirl in the doorway of the kitchen, feeling giddy and grateful and happy. It's a precious and rare feeling. She still has so much to figure out in her life, but for the first time in a long time, she's hopeful. With Maxim at her side, she feels that no obstacle is insurmountable. She wonders if he'll only be an hour. She's missing him. She runs her fingers along the wall of the hallway. The photographs that have been hanging there have disappeared. Maybe they were stolen during the burglary. The piano! She races into the living room. It's still there, unscathed. Breathing a sigh of relief, she switches on the lights. The room looks fresh and clean, his record collection in place. But the desk is bare, the computer and the sound gear gone. Here, too, the photographs that used to hang on the walls are missing. She walks with trepidation toward the piano, scrutinizing all its parts. Under the glow of the chandelier, it's glossy and gleaming. Newly polished, she thinks. Placing her hand on the ebony, she walks around it, stroking its sweeping curves. When she gets to the business end, she notices that his compositions are gone. Perhaps they've been tidied away. She lifts the lid and presses middle C, It's a golden sound that rings through the empty room, seducing her, calming her, centering her. She sits down on the stool, shakes off her feelings of solitude, and begins to play Bach's Prelude No. 23 in B major.
Caroline is sitting by the fire, staring into the flames, huddled in a tartan throw. She doesn't look around when I walk in. Hi. My subdued greeting competes with the crackle of the fire. Caroline angles her head toward me, her expression forlorn, her mouth turned down in sorrow. Oh, it's you, she says. Who were you expecting? She hasn't risen to greet me, and I'm beginning to feel a little unwelcome. She sighs.
I'm sorry. I was just thinking about what Kit would be doing now if he were here.
From nowhere, my grief emerges and smothers me like an itchy woolen blanket. I shrug it off, swallowing the lump that's sticking in my throat. When I get closer to her, I see she's been crying. Oh, Caro, I murmur and squat beside her chair.
Maxim, I'm a widow. I'm 28 and I'm a widow. This wasn't part of the plan.
I take her hand in mine. I know. It wasn't in any of our plans. Even Kit's. Pained blue eyes meet mine.
I don't know, she says.
What do you mean? She leans forward so she's facing me, and in a conspiratorial whisper says,
I think he meant to kill himself.
I squeeze her fingers. Kara, that's not true. Don't think that. It was just a horrid accident. My eyes meet hers, and I'm trying for my most earnest look. But the truth is, I've had the same thought. I can't let her know that, though, and I don't want to believe it either. Suicide is too painful for those of us left behind.
I keep going over that day, she says, searching my face for answers. But I have no idea why.
Alas, neither have I. It was an accident, I reiterate. Let me sit. Releasing her, I slump into the chair opposite hers, facing the fireplace.
Do you want a drink? After all, this is your house.
Her words have a bitter edge that I ignore. I don't want a fight. Blake already offered, and I declined. She exhales and turns back to stare at the flames. We both do, each of us lost in the pain of losing Kit. I had expected the third degree from her, but she's not forthcoming at all, and we sit in an uneasy silence. After a while, the fire dies down. I get up and place another couple of logs in the grate and stoke the flames. Do you want me to go? I ask. She shakes her head. Okay, then. I sit back down, and she tilts her head to the side, her hair falling across her face until she tucks it behind her ear.
I heard about the burglary. Did you lose anything important?
No, just my laptop and my Dex. I think they smashed my iMac.
People are shitty.
They are.
What were you doing in Cornwall?
This and that. I'm trying for humor.
Well, that's illuminating.
She rolls her eyes, and I glimpse a flash of the spirited Caroline I know.
What were you doing in Cornwall?
Escaping from gangsters, if you must know.
Gangsters?
Yes. And falling in love.
Alessia explores the kitchen cupboards and drawers, looking for something to cook for supper. She's not examined their contents in any comprehensive way before, but as she goes through them, she notes that the utensils are all clean and the pots and pans are pristine. She suspects they've never been used. Two of the pans still have the price stickers attached. She finds a few groceries in the larder, pasta, pesto, sun-dried tomatoes, some jars of herbs and spices. Enough to make a meal, but these ingredients don't inspire her. She eyes the kitchen clock. Maxim will be a while yet. She has time to go to the local store to find something a little more enticing for her man. A silly grin spreads over her face. Her man. Her mister. At the bottom of the armoire, she finds the Ziploc bag that she'd stuffed in Mikhail's old rugby sock. The bag that holds her precious savings. Taking out 2 20-pound notes, she slips them into the back pocket of her jeans, grabs her coat, sets the alarm, and leaves.
What? Splutters Caroline. You? In love? And why would that be so improbable? I note that she doesn't continue her line of questioning about gangsters. Maxim, the only thing you love is your dick. That's not true. She cackles, and it's good to hear her laugh, but not so good that it's at my expense. Noticing my less than enthusiastic reaction, she tries to bring her amusement under control.
Okay, so who's been on the sharp end of it?
She says indulgently. You don't have to be quite so crude.
That's not an answer.
I gaze at her, and the warmth and humour slowly fade from her face.
Who?
She presses me. Alessia. She frowns for a split second, and then her eyebrows shoot up.
No,
she gasps.
You're daily.
What do you mean, no?
Maxim, she's your fucking daily, literally.
And a dark cloud crosses her face. A storm is brewing. I shift in my seat, irritated by her response. Well, she isn't my daily anymore.
I knew it. That time when I met her, in your kitchen, you were so weird and attentive toward her.
She spits each word out like venom. She's horrified. Don't be so dramatic. That's not like you.
It is like me.
Since when?
Since my bloody husband upped and killed himself.
She hisses, her eyes glassy with animosity. Shit. She went there. She's using Kit's death in an argument. I gulp down my shock and grief as we glare at each other, the air between us ripe with our unspoken thoughts. Abruptly, she turns her attention back to the fire, her contempt evident in the stubborn line of her chin.
You should just fuck her out of your system,
she grumbles. I don't think I'll ever get her out of my system. I don't want to. I'm in love with her. My words are softly spoken, and they hang in the air as I wait for Caroline's reaction.
You're crazy.
Why?
You know why. She's your fucking cleaner.
Does that matter?
Yes, it matters.
No, it doesn't.
QED. You're crazy if you don't think it matters.
Crazy in love, I shrug. It's the truth.
With the help!
Caro, don't be such a snob. You can't choose who you love. Love chooses you.
Bloody hell!
She stands suddenly, looming over me.
Don't give me some bullshit, cliched homily. She's just a grimy little freeloader, Maxim. Can't you see that? Fuck off, Caroline.
I stand up, bristling with a sense of injustice, and we're practically nose to nose.
You know nothing about her.
I know her type.
From where? From where do you know her type, Lady Trevethick?
I enunciate each syllable, my words echoing off the blue painted walls and framed artwork of this small drawing room. I'm furious. How dare she judge Alessia? Caroline, like me, has led a life of utter fucking privilege. She blanches and steps back, looking at me as if I've just slapped her. Fuck. Mate, this is getting out of hand. I run my fingers through my hair. Caroline, it's not the end of the world.
It is to me.
Why? She glares at me with a look that's both wounded and enraged. I shake my head. I don't understand. Why is this such a big deal to you?
What about
us?
She asks, her voice wavering, her eyes wide. There is no us. God, she's so annoying. We fucked. We were grieving. We're still grieving. I've finally met someone who makes me step up and think about the life I lead, and...
But I thought...
She interrupts me, though her words dry up at the look I give her. What did you think? Us? Together? We had that. We tried that, and you chose my brother. I'm shouting.
We were young, she whispers. And after Kit died...
No, 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 you do not get to do that. Don't try to make me feel guilty. It takes two, Caroline. You made the first move when we were both empty and aching with grief. Maybe it was just an excuse, I don't know. But we're not a good combination. We never have been. We had our chance, but you went off and fucked my brother. You claimed him and his title. I am not your fucking consolation prize. She gapes at me with horror writ large on her face. Fuck.
Get out, she whispers.
You're throwing me out of my own house?
You bastard! Get the fuck out! Go!
She screeches. Picking up an empty wine glass, she hurls it at me. It hits my thigh and falls to the wooden floor where it shatters. We glare at each other in the ensuing and oppressive silence. Tears pool in her eyes, and I can bear it no more. I turn on my heel and exit, slamming the door behind me.
Alessia walks briskly down a side street toward the convenience store that she knows on Royal Hospital Road. It's a cold, dark night, and she pushes her hands deeper into her pockets, grateful for the warm coat that Maxim bought for her. A tingle runs up her spine, raising all the fine hairs on the back of her neck. She glances behind her, suddenly uneasy. But under the street lamps, all is quiet. She is alone, except for a woman walking a large dog on the other side of the road. Alessia shakes her head, chiding herself for overreacting. In Albania, at night, she would be wary of the djinn, the demons that roam the earth after sundown. But she knows that this is superstition. She's still jumpy after her encounter with Dante and Illy. All the same, she picks up her pace and trots to the end of the street and around the corner to the Tesco Express. The store is busier than usual, and she's grateful that there are many customers milling through the aisles. Grabbing a shopping basket, she walks to the fresh produce section and begins to browse through the vegetables on sale.
Hello, Alessia. How have you been?
It takes a fraction of a second for her to realize that the calm, familiar voice is speaking in Albanian. It takes another fraction of a second for fear to grip her heart and her soul.
No, he's here.
I stand outside Trevelyan House, trying to get a hold of my temper. Furious, I button up my coat against the February chill. That did not go well. Fisting my hands, I thrust them into my pockets. I am so fucking angry right now. Too angry to go home to Alessia. I need to walk off my temper. Consumed by my thoughts and beyond pissed off, I turn right and stride up Chelsea Embankment. How could Caroline think she and I had a chance? We know each other too well. We're supposed to be friends. She is my best friend. And she's my brother's widow, for fuck's sake. This is one fine bloody mess, dude. But truth be told, I had no idea that she had designs on me beyond the occasional fuck. Shit. She's jealous. Of Alessia. Fuck. My mind's a mess. I scowl as I cross Oakley Street and stalk past the Mercedes-Benz garage. Even the familiar grace and beauty of the boy with a dolphin statue on the corner cannot lift my mood. My anger is as dark as the night.
Alessia turns, her heart pounding, fear streaking like lightning through her veins. She's suddenly dizzy, her mouth dry. Anatoly is standing over her, invading her space. He's close, too close. I have been looking for you, he continues in their mother tongue. His full lips are twisted in a seemingly casual smile that doesn't touch his piercing pale blue eyes. He scrutinizes her, looking for answers. His chiseled face is thinner and his fair hair longer than she remembers. He looms over her, bundled up in what looks like an expensive Italian coat, intimidating her even now. She starts to tremble as she wonders how the hell he found her.
Hello, Anatoly,
she stutters, her voice shaky and full of fear.
Surely you can do better than that, carissima. No smile for the man you are going to marry?
No. Alessia's feet seem frozen to the shop floor as despair rises through her body. Her mind races. How can she escape? She is surrounded by shoppers going about their business, but she's never felt so stranded and alone. They are oblivious to what is happening in front of them. Gently, Anatoly strokes her cheek with a gloved finger, and her stomach recoils.
Don't touch me. I've come to take you home, he says casually,
as if they'd been talking only yesterday. Alessia stares at him, unable to speak.
No kind words. You are not pleased to see me.
His eyes flash with a spark of irritation, and something more, something darker. Speculation? Admiration? A challenge accepted? Bile rises in Alessia's throat, but she swallows it down. He grasps her arm at her elbow and squeezes.
You are coming with me. I have spent a small fortune tracking you down. Your parents are devastated by your disappearance, and your father says you sent no word back to them that you were safe and well.
Alessia is confused. This is not what happened. Does he know that her mother helped her? Is her mother okay? What did her mother say? He tightens his hold on her arm.
You should be ashamed of yourself, but we'll deal with that later. Right now, let's go and collect your things. I'm taking you home.
Chapter 27 I storm down Cheney Walk. Fuck it. I need a drink to help me calm the fuck down. I snatch a look at my watch. Alessia's not expecting me back until 7. I have time. I do an about-face and head back to Oakley Street, with the Cooper's Arms firmly set in my mind as my destination. The wind whips around me, but I don't feel the cold. I'm too angry. I cannot believe Caroline's reaction. Or maybe I knew it would be bad. Did I? That bad? Throwing me out of the house bad? Bollocks to that. Usually, the only person who makes me this angry is my mother. Both of them are appalling snobs. As am I. Fuck. I'm not. No. What will Caroline say when I tell her I want to marry Alessia? What will my mother say? Marry someone with money, darling. Kit chose wisely. My dark mood grows darker still as I stomp into the night.
I am not going with you, Alessia says, her voice shaking and betraying her fear.
Let's discuss this outside.
Anatoly tightens his grip on her elbow to the point of pain.
No,
Alessia cries, and she wrenches her arm free from his hold.
Don't touch me!
He glares at her, his neck reddening and his eyes narrowing to icy pinpricks.
Why are you behaving like this?
You know why. His mouth presses into a hard line.
I came a long way for you. I am not leaving without you. You are promised to me by your father. Why are you dishonoring him?
Alessia flushes.
Is it the man?
Man? Alessia's heart beats faster. Does he know about the Maxim?
If it is, I'll kill him.
There is no man, she whispers quickly, her fear spiraling out of control, sucking her down deeper into her despair.
That friend of your mother. She sent an email. She said there was a man.
Alessia is dumbfounded. Magda? Anatoly takes the basket from her and clasps her arm once more at the elbow.
Let's go, he says, and he leads her toward the automatic door, dumping the shopping basket on the nearby stack.
Alessia, still reeling from his sudden appearance, allows him to lead her out into the street.
I stand at the bar, nursing a Jameson. The amber liquid sears my throat, but it calms the violent storm as it pools in my stomach. I'm a fool. A priapic fool. I knew that bedding Caroline was going to come back and bite me on the ass. Fuck. She's right, though. I've never thought beyond my dick. Until Alessia. And then that all changed. Changed for the better. I've never met anyone like her. Someone possessing nothing. Except her talent, her resourcefulness, and her beautiful face. I wonder what I would have made of my life if I'd been born in lowlier circumstances. Maybe I'd be a struggling musician, if I'd even learned to play. Shit. There's so much that I take for granted. I've been coasting through my life. Everything handed to me on a plate. Nothing affecting me and doing exactly as I pleased. Now I have to work for a living. And several hundred people depend on me and my decisions. It's a daunting task and a huge responsibility that I have to accept if I want to maintain my lifestyle. In the midst of this turmoil, I found Alessia, and in an indecently short time, I've come to care for her more than I've ever cared for anyone. More than I've ever cared for myself. I love her, and she loves me and cares for me. She's a rare gift, a wonderful woman who needs me, and I need her. She's a woman who makes me step up my game, a woman who makes me want to be a better man. Isn't that what one wishes for in a life partner? And then there's Caroline. As I stare despondently into my glass, I have to admit that I hate arguing with Caroline. She is my best friend. She has been forever. My world feels out of kilter if we're at loggerheads. It happened occasionally when Kit was here to mediate, but she's never thrown me out of the house before. What's worse is that I had meant to ask for her help sorting out Alessia's legal status in the UK. Caroline's father is a senior director in the Home Office. If anyone can help, he can. But that's out of the question for the moment. I drain my glass. Caroline will come around. I hope she'll come around. I slam the glass on the counter and nod to the barman. It's 7:15. It's time to go. I need to get back to my girl.
Anatoly keeps a firm grip on Alessia's elbow as he marches her back up the street toward Maxim's building. You are his housekeeper? Yes, her answer is clipped. She's trying not to panic, thinking through her options. What if Maxim is home? Anatoly threatened to kill him. The thought of what Anatoly might do to Maxim is terrifying. Magda must have written to her mother. Why? Alessia had begged her not to. She has to get away, but Alessia knows she cannot outrun him. Think, Alessia, think.
So he is your employer?
Yes.
That is all?
Alessia turns her head sharply.
Of course!
Her tone is vehement. He stops, pulling her roughly, and regards her through hooded eyes that gleam with suspicion in the muted glow of the street lamps.
He's not had what's mine?
It takes a moment for Alessia to realize what he's referring to.
No,
she says quickly, breathlessly, blushing so that her cheeks heat up in spite of the frigid February air. Anatoly nods once, as if accepting her answer, and she feels a momentary pang of relief. He follows her into the apartment. The alarm beeps, and Alessia is thankful that Maxim has not returned. Anatoly looks around the hallway. Out of the corner of her eye, she watches his brows rise. He's impressed.
He has money, this man,
he mutters. She doesn't know if he's directing a question at her or not.
And you live here?
Yes.
Where do you sleep?
In that room. Alessia points to the door of the spare bedroom.